The new film, Master, is a thriller set at a predominantly white liberal arts college, where a history of systemic racism still haunts the campus in the present day. The film stars Regina Hall as a professor who steps into a new role as the school's first Black housemaster. Things get weird and unsettling. For one, her new residence has got some creepy stuff going on. Plus, a Black incoming freshman is facing challenges in adjusting to her surroundings. This film is sure to get viewers talking. I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about Master on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me today is iHeartRadio producer Joelle Monique. Hello, Joelle.
Hi, Aisha. How you doing?
Good, good. It's great to have you back. And also here is writer, comedian, and co-host of the Bad Romance podcast, Jordaine Searles. Hi, Jordaine.
Hi. Glad to be back.
Yes, great to have you. Now, in Master, Regina Hall stars as Gail Bishop, the first Black housemaster of one of the residences at the fictional Ancaster College. Like most predominantly white institutions, Ancaster harbors a troubling past when it comes to race that it's never truly reckoned with. And that shows up in ways both big and small for the few Black students and faculty on campus. Gail, for instance, has to regularly contend with racial microaggressions from her colleagues. And then there's Jasmine Moore, played by Zoe Renee, who's an incoming freshman. Now, upon arriving on campus, she's assigned to a dorm room that's notorious for being the site of a gruesome urban legend. In addition to uncomfortable interactions with her white peers, strange occurrences begin happening to her, including mysterious threats and the appearance of a noose left on her dorm room door. She also clashes over a grade with her Black professor, Liv Beckman, who's played by Amber Gray. The film marks the directorial debut of Mariama Diallo, and it's in select theaters and streaming on Amazon Prime. And speaking of which, just to note, Amazon is among NPR's financial supporters and also distributes certain NPR content. Now, Joelle, let me start with you. What did you think of Master?
Oh, there were so many feelings. So many. I started with sort of interesting, like, what if a movie just played every microaggression you ever lived? Is that the whole plot of the movie? Interesting. Is it an educational film for white people? Like, this is what it's like to sort of peruse your establishments. And then mass confusion. What is happening? This can't be based on real people. Twice I had to look up who wrote and directed this. Okay, cool. And then there's a big twist at the end where I was like, okay, I understand now where we were going, why we tried to go on this journey. I don't think it was executed as well as it could have been. We really need to have a conversation about who is doing these Jordan Peele Get Out style films and what it is the original Get Out was trying to do and what is it y'all are trying to do. Because we're seeing a lot of these sort of, I don't even want to call them copycats, because the idea of like using horror to explore, you know, what it means to be a Black American is interesting and has been done well for a long time. But there's a specific thriller aspect of it that's happening post Get Out that, whew, it's been messy, as we've talked about previously on this show.
Yes. Your confusion and the way you just described that was exactly kind of my feeling as well. So, Jordaine, how about you? What were your thoughts? You were kind of waving your finger earlier.
Usually, you know, as a critic, I try to be fair and I try to be really thoughtful, but I feel like this is a moment where I have to have a J. Sherman, the critic moment where it's just like, it stinks. I hate it.
Oh, she came out swinging.
I have seen it three times at this point. Wow. So it's like, okay. I have had enough time to like gestate it. I can see what it's trying to do, but it fails. And the way in which it fails is very symptomatic of the problems that filmmakers seem to be running into when they try to address these topics right now.
Yeah. I don't know if I go so far as to say I feel that strongly about it, but I think I'm more towards Joelle, and also just maybe a little bit more in the middle, where as someone who herself went to a PWI, a predominantly white institution like this, a lot of it did ring true to me. But I think there is sort of a difference between something ringing true and working as entertainment or working on like an artistic level. Mm-hmm. Because I've had those moments. I've had those uncomfortable moments where you are the only Black person in the room. There's one moment in particular that I think was done in a really powerful and emotional way, where Jasmine goes to a what looks like a frat house sort of party. And she's pretty much the only Black girl. There might be some other people in the background, but it's basically all white people. And they start singing along to this rap song, and the N-word is deployed, and they are doing it with wild abandon. And it's like filmed in this very sort of, there's neon lights going on, and it's kind of disorienting. And I was like, oh, I get what the director is going for here with like just that feeling of being in that environment and not being able to say anything. And I think visually that was interesting to me. But there's this like mix of social commentary, but then the horror elements, for the most part for me, kind of fell flat. And it gets a little bit muddled in the lore and the urban legend in ways that I found kind of confusing at times. And it just didn't really gel together for me. And then at the end, the twists that were kind of dancing around, that just to me was sort of another example of, oh man, this is when Black horror can go wrong in execution. It was kind of giving me Antebellum vibes. And if you don't remember Antebellum, this movie came out in 2020, starred Janelle Monáe. And that also had a twist that just felt like, what is the purpose of this? Like, that movie was much more about torture and sort of torture porny in a way than this is, but I still felt like the execution was just as kind of half-baked.
Well, the frustrating thing is that there is truth. I've had those experiences too, where I was the only, when I was in college, I was in the honors program and there were only two Black people. Where I think this movie fails a lot is that it has so little empathy for its Black characters, in my opinion. And I think that that's really strange.
It's the weirdest.
It's so strange. Like the way that these Black women treat each other, the main three women.
Black women don't treat each other like that. It's weird.
They're so terrible to each other.
It's so weird.
It's almost like the movie is trying to make the argument that in this space, this is how Black women have to treat each other to survive. And it's like, I don't really believe that. I don't believe it because I've been in these spaces and most of this behavior makes no sense to me. Like the fact that Jasmine in this film is really going through it so much, it just seems like she's alone. Even when she's speaking to the other two Black women in the film, they don't really listen. They're constantly thinking about themselves. She has no actual help. And when she does finally meet someone who wants to help her, she's so like caught up in wanting white people to like her that she rejects a community that could probably be there for her. And so it's just like this thing where so much of this movie is treating whiteness like the villain, and it is, but also like these women are like villains to each other. And I don't really understand what that's about or if that's intentional.
Trying to break down and understand this movie legitimately gave me a headache, and including Antebellum. It's also a lot like Bad Hair. And like, here is an interesting premise with incredibly talented folks that just somehow completely fell off the tracks. And I don't understand what happened. First of all, Jasmine is a person who sleepwalks and has terrible dreams. The whole movie, they do this like red light motif when something scary is happening. My thought was that people are trying to tell her she's imagining these things happening to her, these microaggressions, these horror moments, but she's not, and they're real. And you get this moment later with a character who is another Black student, where what could have been a really great moment of her going, hey, I see you struggling with your white roommate who's really trash, had that happen, it's terrible. You know, there's a space for you here where you can, you know, link up with the other eight POC students and like vibe and it'll be cool. And she never goes there.
No.
It's weird. We don't know who Jasmine is. Why doesn't she want to go home? Mm. Why this school specifically? Does she really care? She came all the way to this institution that seems to have no connection to. I mean, she's not wearing the school hoodie. She's not like trying to attend a game. I don't understand who Jasmine is as a person. And that was deeply confusing. And then on top of that, you have this moment, which again is a very specific action of a Black girl at a frat party who goes into a white boy's room who happens to be dating her roommate that she then kisses.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for this. There's no explanation.
I was thinking about Toni Morrison so much while I was watching this, specifically The Bluest Eye. Like, once again, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but it seems like Jasmine's main issue is that she really, really wants to be white. And I don't really think that the movie really digs into that the way that they should, because like
not.
She shows up, she has natural hair later on, she straightened her hair when she's stressed out, it's natural again, like her hair keeps on changing. I don't know, man, like if you're struggling when I'm stressed out with like whiteness and stuff, like I'm going to DM a Black person. I'm going to call a Black, I'm going to text the Black person. And the fact that she just doesn't, she makes this choice to be kind of alone because her friends don't really pay attention to her. Also, there's the matter of the paper with her professor, Liv, played by Amber Gray. Every scene about that paper is so wild to me.
Let's actually play that moment, because that sort of interaction between Jasmine and Liv, her professor, really like struck me in ways that I'm still trying to figure out. So basically, Jasmine did not get a good grade on an essay about the Scarlet Letter. And Liv is, you know, trying to tell her that she didn't engage with the actual prompt, which I guess involved like talking about race in the Scarlet Letter. And so Jasmine's like, well, this is not about race. Like, what are you talking about? Like, why do you expect me to do that? And Liv is very much like, there is race. You should be able to figure this out and blah, blah, blah. Let's hear a little bit of that moment.
This is advanced stuff. It can be really hard to make the adjustment to a school like this, especially for students of color
Where do you think I'm coming from? I'm from the suburbs. Okay, Tacoma. I was valedictorian, class president. I'm not some... You don't even know who I am.
The thing about setting a horror movie in an academic environment is that it's not just about race in this case. It's also about all these other things. Like, I think there's this sort of belief that Gen Z, millennials are much more inclined to argue about their grades and be very upset about things. And professors, I think, in older generations think like, oh, you're entitled. You think you should always get the grade that you deserve. And so it's also throwing in this aspect of like, okay, does the film think that Jasmine is right? Or does it think that Liv is right? And it wasn't clear to me what was going on here, at least until... Again, there's a twist at the end, but like the twist sort of puts things into perspective in a way that I think is just weird.
First of all, if you're a Black student and you have a Black teacher, it's like a unicorn. Like if you didn't grow up in a space where there were a lot of Black teachers, you're like, I have a Black teacher. This is amazing. And I've literally never had the experience where a Black teacher wasn't immediately like, how can I help you? It's very much immediately like, let me support you. And so to get this like very iced out, you just need to try harder, no explanation, no guidance. That's not reality at all. After the twist, I was like, oh, this is meant to be like a clue. And it's one of those moments where I was like, man, I wish I had seen this movie in a theater with an audience to see what the reaction was like. If the film had been more balanced and better established rules for horror, because there's a lot of, it's my biggest pet peeve. It happened a lot in Bad Hair too. There's a scary monster out there in both terms, like a witch, essentially, that they never dive into why they would be hunting this specific person. There are no rules to ground this story and it becomes so problematic. This scene is very emblematic of that because you don't get the symbolism until way too late for it to really have the kind of impact it should have. It's not a lot of clarity.
Well, we haven't even talked at all about Regina Hall and her character. And, you know, she is the first Black housemaster, which is interesting because there have been recent attempts at certain universities, including Yale, to sort of rename that position. So housemaster could be seen as having sort of ties to the idea of master and enslaved. And so there have been institutions that have actually been like, no, we're going to call you like the dean of students or a dean of some sort, which I think is just interesting to consider. And I don't know if this was at all something that the director considered, but like the fact that she is the housemaster and there's weird stuff going on in her, the house that she's now living in. At one point we see like one of those mammy jars or like memorabilia, whatever you want to call it. As much as I had a lot of confusion throughout this movie and don't necessarily feel like it landed well, I do think that Regina Hall, as always, was probably for me the best part of it. And I thought she gave a really strong performance, but I'm curious what you all thought about her and sort of what the movie's trying to do with her, because it does seem she is sort of torn in a way between the Liv character, because we haven't mentioned, but Liv is also up for tenure. And so there's like this weird tension between her relationship with Liv and then her relationship with Jasmine when Jasmine comes to her and is like, this woman gave me a failing grade and I want to report her for it. I can kind of understand why the Regina Hall character was a little bit more like distant and aloof for part of it. But what do you all think?
I think it's interesting that they were trying to juxtapose her character with the Jasmine character. I mean, the first couple of scenes are sort of back and forth of their like first days on campus and their new roles. Jasmine is student, Regina Hall's character as master, and then not exploring how those roles are different and in the ways that they're similar. They're like, we're just going about our day. But I'm like, there's a lot to say about the person who has a leading title, but without any of the power of that. And I think Regina does a solid performance throughout all of this. When she's in her haunted, freaky house, she's really performing that scaredness. She's doing everything she can with the limited scale of this character. Regina has the depths to go so much deeper. I think the script does her a disservice by not exploring these things to their fullest extent.
Yeah, absolutely. Regina Hall's character is really frustrating because she does a great performance. She's always great. You know, I always want her to win. Her relationship with Jasmine, it seems softer than the one with Liv, but I actually think it's pretty antagonistic because it's just like she's trying to force this child to kind of like push through it. And her whole argument is that like, well, you know, I have been the only Black woman in a space and it was really hard. And what I went through, like that helped me, you know, shape me who I am. You have to go through this too. And I'm not going to give you anything to help. And it's so strange to me because like you're in this position where you can help. And she is too interested in proving a point than actually being of help to anyone.
But Jordan, can I say that this is the one part that felt super real to me? I don't know about you guys, but like for me, it wasn't a choice if I was going to college. It was just assumed and then told very vigorously, like, you go to school. And I think that when we get into institutions like that, particularly the older generation has the thought of like, oh, no, you just have to push through. Racism isn't going anywhere. Like, you just need to keep your nose to the grindstone and really push through. And in the end, you'll have the credentials and the access that require you to do better for your community, which is a great spiel. But in, you know, actuality doesn't work so great. It causes, and I think that was maybe the film's point. And it's the one thing I walked away from the film being like, I'm glad at the very least it tried to explore it. But then I don't want to spoil anything, but what happens to Jasmine at the end sort of undercuts it. Then you can't engage with it beyond it's an ending, I guess.
Yeah, it seems to be working as a catalyst, but I think that what it is a catalyst for is wrong because like, this whole time, Jasmine is getting racially harassed and she thinks that it's like a supernatural thing and nobody really takes her seriously and all that stuff. But like the reason why Jasmine has such a hard time at school is because the Black women who are supposed to guide her don't. Mm-hmm. So knowing all of these things, the way that the ending works in terms of what it pushes Regina Hall to do doesn't actually make any sense because what you're saying is a problem, but you are also the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. One last thing I want to ask you about, and we've already kind of talked about this, but in general, where do you think we are in the state of Black horror? And I'm torn because so many reviewers now compare these things to Get Out, and I think sometimes it's true, and then sometimes it's just like it's become a catch-all. Mm. The twist here does very much feel sort of Get Out-y.
Yeah.
But, you know, what needs to change or what do you want to see out of this genre?
Whatever sub-genre of Blackness you're exploring in your film, like, you need to know it. This is not how Black academia works. Mm. There's just so much about the experience of being Black in academia that isn't explored here, and by not understanding fully that community, you do a huge disservice to it. You know, Black horror, I think, is a great space. But for me, a lot of these films that have failed in their lack of humor, right? I think what makes most Black horror sing are these moments of levity so that when you get to the horror and the trauma, you're like, it feels like an actual life and therefore it's much more devastating. When we center on whiteness and its impact on Blackness as opposed to Blackness and just the survival and the everyday of it, then what are we really talking about? What we're talking about then is just our oppression, and that's not who Black people are. there was so much more than just how we've been oppressed.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for is additional comedy and thoroughly researched subcommunities.
I agree. There's like something culturally missing because there's so much obsession with whiteness and fixation on whiteness. So we are getting these films that are made to speak directly to white people. And then I find like, okay, well, there's nothing here for me. Like, you know, there has to be a mix. Like a thing that I really loved about Get Out is the times when Daniel Kaluuya's character is trying to connect with other Black people and the times that he does connect with Rod. And there's just no, so many of these films fail because there's like no connection. These Black people are in these bad situations, but they don't care about each other. They don't look after each other. They don't get to know each other. So then we don't get to know them as characters. It's so focused on the situation that they are in and not the people.
I totally agree with both those points you made. And I really do wish there could be more humor and levity and just a feeling that these characters are actually full characters and not just conduits for the horror that happens to them and around them. So we talked a lot about Master. We want to know what you think about it after you've seen it. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. Up next, we'll be talking about what's making us happy this week.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Discovery Plus. How does it feel to chase a sports legacy, fight for justice, or compete in a competitive table-setting competition? On Discovery Plus, you can stream hundreds of human stories, from new originals like Werner Herzog's Last Exit Space to acclaimed masterpieces like RGB, Man on Wire, and Jiro Dreams of Sushi. It's the streaming home of documentaries, plus so much more. Discovery Plus. Start your free trial. Terms apply.
Now it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What's Making Us Happy. Joelle, let's start with you.
Yes. Okay. I am a podcast girl. I be loving listening to podcasts, and most of my podcasts are about pop culture, but specifically the nerdy segment of pop culture. And so I am really digging the podcast X-Ray Vision from Crooked. It's super fun. My girl Rosie is on it. It's also hosted by the amazing Jason Concepcion and Cody Ziegler. If you're into the Marvel, DC, animated canon of things, like, and you just want jovial people with deep, deep knowledge on the subject who will talk for hours, like, that's your go-to. I'm loving X-Ray. It's been a lot of fun in my, what are we, in the fourth wave of pandemic living. It's brought a lot of levity to my day. So yeah, go check out X-Ray Vision from Crooked.
Thank you, Joelle. Jordan, how about you?
What's been making me happy is actually a show that's already over, but, you know, it's streaming on Hulu, so anyone can still watch it. It's Man Seeking Woman. I have been watching it with my boyfriend. It's been our like chill show. And I was really sad that I missed it first run because it's so funny. It's so cute. It's so quick. And I really like how, even though it's based on like this guy who's trying to find love, it branches out and gives the women on the show their own storylines. And the storylines are actually like really funny and cool. And I felt especially called out by some of them as a person who is approaching 30. So it's really good if you want to just a chill show.
Awesome. So that's Man Seeking Woman, and you can find it on Hulu. Well, what's making me happy this week is sort of a twofer, but the main thing is that, so Megan Thee Stallion and Dua Lipa have a new song out called Sweetest Pie. I love it. It's great. The music video is really great. But the thing that is making me even happier than that is this mashup of Sweetest Pie with a song from 1985, one of my favorite like 80s pop R&B songs. It's Sherelle and Alexandra O'Neal's Saturday Love. And the DJ who mashed it up is Amorphis, who you may recognize. He's like the king of mashups right now. He did a mashup of Kiss It Better by Rihanna and Never Too Much by Luther Vandross. And this new mashup of Sweetest Pie and Saturday Love is just so great. I want you to listen to it for a second. I am obsessed with this. I've listened to it many times, and he originally put it on his social media, but you can also find a longer version on YouTube. So that's Amorphis and his mashup of Saturday Love and Sweetest Pie. And that is what was making me happy this week. And if you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations, subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And that brings us to the end of our show. Joelle, Monique, Jordan Searles, thanks to you both for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.
And this episode was produced by Mike Katziff and edited by Jessica Reedy. And Hello Come In provides the music you're bobbing your head to right now. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all next week.